So hi, everyone. Welcome to the Partners for Progressive Israel election series. This is a part of our Conversations with Israel program. This is the third of four calls that we'll host that will provide insider perspectives on the upcoming Israeli national elections, which will be held on March 17th. So my name is Adam Eisler. I'm the new Director of Operations and Outreach here at Partners for Progressive Israel. Today we're speaking with Naomi Chazan. Naomi Chazan is a professor emerita of political science and African studies at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem and dean of the School of Government and Society at the Academic College of Tel Aviv-Yafo. She holds a BA and MA from Columbia and a PhD from the Hebrew University. Naomi Chazan was first elected to the Knesset in 1992 on the merits ticket and was a Knesset member for three terms. She served as Deputy Speaker of the Knesset and was a member of the Economic, Foreign Affairs and Defense, Education, Immigration, and Status of Women Committees. She served as President of the New Israel Fund from 2008 until 2012. Chazan currently serves as Dean of the School of Government and Society at the Academic College of Tel Aviv-Yafo and as the Director of the Center for the Advancement of Women in the Public Sphere at the Van Leer Institute in Jerusalem.
Thank you very much all for joining this call. I'll spend a few minutes at the beginning essentially doing three things. Number one, I want to describe the atmosphere now with barely 4.5 days before the polls open. Secondly, I'll try to estimate what the results are going to be. And third, to assess, at least initial assessment, of the aftermath of the elections in terms of at least coalition construction and the next few moves. I'll start by saying something that I think is becoming increasingly evident. These elections were initially billed as totally superfluous, unnecessary, untimely, a luxury, etc., etc., etc. I think we can all agree at this stage that they're increasingly significant to the point of perhaps being even vital. In other words, as the campaign season has progressed, it's becoming increasingly apparent that there is a possibility for change. There are alternatives for a Netanyahu government, and that people really, really feel that they don't want more of the same. And the sense of not wanting more of the same is pervasive. I want to be really quite insistent on that point. This is not a question just of center-left, but everywhere on the right, and especially within the Likud, there is a feeling that perhaps Netanyahu has outlived his welcome on the political stage in Israel. And therefore, the contest is becoming much closer. But more significantly, it is very intensely contested to the point of being viciously contested at points. This is probably the most hard-fought election in Israel since 1992. And that's a period of over 20 years now. And therefore, its importance is rising as a function of the fact that it is becoming closer and closer and closer. And I don't know how words can convey the feeling of what is taking place here in the last week or so, but ever since Mr. Netanyahu returned from Washington and expected to see a spike in the polls in his favor and did not really witness that spike, the situation on the electoral front has become really, really extremely charged. And I would say that, frankly, there's suspense in the air at this point in anticipation of Tuesday, and especially of Tuesday at 10 p.m. Israel time, when the first exit polls will be announced and we'll get some idea of what the situation is. So we're in the midst of the last few days of a hard-fought election with a real possibility of change, despite what you might be reading on the various websites or in the American press. Now, having said that, let me give you some idea of what the polls are showing in the last 24 hours. And I want to remind you and myself that the polls, last poll will be published tomorrow evening at about 7 p.m. according to law, because during the last days it's not possible to publish polls according to law. And the latest polls are showing anywhere between a 3 to 5 seat difference between what's known as the Zionist Union, or its Labor Party, and Tzipi Livni. Herzog Livni ticket is running anywhere between 24 and 26 seats to 21, 22 seats to the Likud under Netanyahu. In other words, during the past week alone, when the two parties were virtually tied, the Zionist Union, the Herzog ticket, is gaining on the Likud, and the trend is very clear here. I have not seen one poll of the many polls published that does not put the Zionist Union slightly ahead of the Likud, and in some cases even more than slightly ahead of the Likud. It now looks like the third largest party is going to be one of two parties, either the Joint Arab List, which is polling about 13 seats in most of the polls, and Yesh Atid, the Yair Lapid's party, which is polling 12 to 13 seats. But very close behind these two parties is Naftali Bennett's Beit Yehudi party, Jewish Home Party, with 12 seats. In other words, the next group of parties includes the far left, the far right, and the center, the key center party. The ultra-Orthodox party, Shas, United Torah Judaism, are polling about 6, 7, 8, depending where what one is looking at. Lieberman's party is 6, 5, one poll has shown them actually at 4. Yachad, which is the ultra-right party, which includes Baruch Marzel, Eli Ishai, is around 4, maybe even 5. And Meretz is averaging around 5, but maybe picking up a little in the last few days. The big unknown in these elections, frankly, at this moment, is probably Kulanu. That's the party formed by Moshe Kahlon, who used to be in the Likud. And it will take anywhere between 8 and 11 seats, depending on what poll one is looking at. This one way of reading these polls is to say this is a toss-up. In other words, things are much too close to call. And let me remind you that in any event, all polls at this stage have about a 4% possibility of statistical error. So when we're talking about the smaller parties, it can make all the difference between passing the threshold, which is 4 seats, or going below the threshold. Because we're talking about such small percentages of the entire electorate. If you're like me and you like to look very carefully at elections, election patterns, polls, surveys, and the like, this is so fascinating. It's unbelievable. But I would venture to guess at this juncture, and I hope I'm not off, that in a very interesting, intriguing way, it now looks highly likely that the largest party in the Knesset is going to be the Zionist Union led by Yitzhak Herzog and Tzipi Livni. And unless something happens in the last 3 or 4 days, and by the way, we have a history of something happening in the last 3 or 4 days, this seems to be the trend, and in a sense, it's a harbinger of real change, at least in terms of the election results themselves. Now, I would very strongly advise everybody who is following these elections very closely to look at two things which might appear to be somewhat technical, but to my mind are extremely, extremely important. And number one is the number of people who actually turn out at the polling station. That means the turnout rate. The larger the turnout rate, the less probability that some of the smaller parties will pass the threshold, because the total number of valid votes counted is what really will make a difference. By the way, part of the Likud's problem today is that many of its voters are so unclear that they may stay at home simply and reduce the number in certain areas of the country of people who actually go out and vote. And the second thing that I would look at very closely is where the undecided voters are going. And the number of undecided, the percentage is still quite high. It's somewhere between 15% and 17%. And they will decide in the next few days, and some of them will decide while they're in the polling booth. And that's going to make a tremendous amount of difference because things are so close indeed. But again, if I had to call the elections at this stage, I would say it will be not be a success for Netanyahu, and we may find that he is actually on his way out. Now, whatever the results, and that's part three of my introduction, whatever the results, on the day after, the important thing is that politics take over where the voters have finished, completed their job. In other words, the question is, who can compose a coalition and of what sort? And you will read a lot of commentary on this subject, a lot of it revolving around the fact that the Joint Arab Party is very, very important for these elections. Will they join the coalition? The answer is no. They will not join a center-left coalition. The only really valid question is whether they will agree to be part of a blocking majority. If they do, it will be much easier for Mr. Herzog to form a coalition. And the other thing you'll be hearing a lot about is, where is Moshe Kahlon going to go? Because, frankly, he is the coalition maker in many respects, the day after the elections. My sense is, from talking to a lot of people who know him well and to Moshe Kahlon himself, if he is offered the job of finance minister, he will take that job. And the only question is, who will offer him that job? In other words, what I'm trying to say is my estimate is at this juncture, and here I'm being a little more cautious than I was when I was calling the election results. Whoever gets the call from President Rivlin to attempt to form a coalition, if it's Herzog, and it now looks as if it is highly likely that it will be Mr. Herzog, if he gets that call, he will be able to scrape together a coalition. And if he does not get the call, then Mr. Netanyahu will be able to put together a coalition as well. So that's where things stand at the moment. Let me just highlight 3 points before I open it up to question. Number one, these elections have been important because they have re-engaged many Israeli citizens at the grassroots who are in every way possible calling for change. And this is very important, and it will outlast the election season. The second point is these elections have highlighted the extent to which Israeli society is seriously divided, and it will take a lot of work to knit together a functioning society in the months and years ahead. And number three, if anybody doubted if these were really important elections, they will have a big impact on issues of peace and Israel's relations with its neighbors and with the international community, initially in terms of mood and direction, and hopefully in terms also of action. So I'll stop at this point and be happy to entertain any questions you might have.
Thank you so much for that. So, yeah, we'll now open it up for questions and answers. Just unmute when you're ready to ask a question. Just press *6 to unmute yourself. Whoever would like to ask a question, just press *6.
David Abraham, given Lapid's earlier announcement that he wouldn't in any way cooperate with Arab parties, is it possible to have the kind of blocking coalition you mentioned in view of the fact that Lapid would probably be necessary to any liberal majority?
A blocking coalition means precisely that. A blocking majority means that the Arab party will, or parties, it's not clear what their fate will be after the elections, will support the coalition from outside. They will not be part of the coalition. So that whole problem actually it doesn't exist in terms of a blocking majority because they're not members of the coalition. Let me just add very quickly to press home that point. United Torah Judaism has been part, has supported right-wing coalitions from the outside, but it's never been a member of the coalition. So in return for certain benefits, it votes with a coalition, but it's never sat in the government.
Nomi, this was fascinating. To what extent do we know what are Herzog's plans in terms of the conflict? Like, what does he plan to do with Gaza, for example? I've been following the movement for the future of the Western Negev. And they're calling for clear, like they're calling for solutions of some sort. To what extent do we know what Herzog is planning on doing? Herzog and Livni, of course. Thank you.
Yes. Look, it's very hard to tell. These elections, except for with one or two exceptions, are not very detailed in terms of future plans. Although I must admit that Labour, or Zionist Union, as they call themselves, finally came out with a platform a week ago that Likud has not even deigned to publish anything resembling a party platform to date. I think that at this point, there's going to be an attempt to find a basis for a resumption of negotiations. Obviously, that's going to include Gaza itself. There's been a lot of talk recently, unrelated to the elections, of the possibility of removing the siege on Gaza in return for some kind of non-belligerency agreement with the Hamas. I think these and other options will be explored. But in general, again, I think the mood is going to be different. The willingness to explore possibilities is definitely there. How this is going to work out, I can't tell you exactly, because I'm not sure that Herzog himself has gone into that resolution at this juncture.
I just want to remind everyone that when you're done asking the question, to just press star 6 to cut down on the background noise.
Hello, this is Al Seliger.
This is Andy Winnick. I'm wondering if you could comment a bit more on Kalon and the Kalanu Party. In terms of, aside from personal position, are there any principles involving the nature of the coalition government and its policies that motivate him?
Are we talking about Kahlon? Is that what you asked about? I assume it is. Okay, let me assume that I understood the question correctly. Kahlon's platform is almost entirely geared to social economic issues. And he puts at the top of his agenda issues related to cost of living, to housing, to social welfare, and to mitigating the centralism or the monopolistic tendencies within the Israeli economy. It's really very detailed on economic issues. That's the platform he's working on. And by the way, that's where he has the most credibility. He was a very successful minister of communication. And even though he's a self-proclaimed neoliberal, he claims that he's neoliberal with a conscience or with a great deal of compassion. He has a very strong social democratic streak as well, and has recently, in the last few days, stated very vociferously that the difference between his party in Labour is really not very big, great indeed on these issues. Kahlon is a product of the Likud party, and in many respects, he even likes to present himself as the true image of the Likud, or the real Likudnik. And that's why he'll be under immense pressure not to join a Labour-led government after the elections. Again, I'm saying if he's offered the job he wants, I think he will take it and hope that there won't be that much difference on economic and social issues. It's unclear to me where he actually stands and matters related to the conflict. And there may be a difference of opinion, even a large difference of opinion, between Michael Owen, who used to be ambassador to the United States, who was on his list, and his key security personality, Yoav Gallant, who used to be a commander of the Southern Front. So there, I think the picture is murkier. Let's put it that way. But again, I that doesn't change anything that I said in one way or another on the issue of Kahlon being very much the kingmaker here.
Naomi, this is Ralph Seliger.
Hi, Ralph.
I wanted to ask if you have any insight to share on the fact that Meretz and the Arab List failed to have an excess votes agreement, and it's supposedly because the nationalist Balad politicians objected to an agreement with a Zionist party. And might this augur badly for the Arab List holding together after the election?
I'll answer that directly. Meretz, by the way, was the first to sign an excess vote agreement with Labor right after the elections were announced. But the idea of re-examining the excess vote agreements arose a couple of weeks ago, and I must admit that I was party to the idea and therefore know the ins and outs very well. And it basically stemmed from a very cold assessment of the fact that excess vote agreements allow the parties that have signed the agreement to divide their total excess votes among themselves in such a way that they may be able to pick up a seat or so. And as we examined where the trends of the polls were going, we began to see that there are actually two parties that are definitely in the center-left camp that don't have excess vote agreements. One of them is Yesh Atid, Yair Lapid's party, and the other was the Joint Arab List. And the idea came up that we should re-examine the excess vote agreements, have Labor sign an excess vote agreement with Lapid, and possibly pick up an extra seat that way because of the way the excess vote agreements work, and then Meretz sign an excess vote agreement with the Joint Arab List. And this was suggested to the various parties involved. Everybody saw the logic behind such a move, including key elements in the Joint Arab List. And you're absolutely right. There was a very heated discussion or debate within the Joint Arab List, and Balad decided that it doesn't want an excess vote agreement with anybody under the circumstances, because that would mean signing with Meretz, who considered a Zionist party, and the idea was scuttled. Now, I see this, frankly, as a pure example of cutting off your nose to spite your face. Nobody wins from this decision. In a sense, the entire camp or the bloc has lost 1 to 2 seats because this agreement was not signed. But that's the way things are, and one can't cry over spilled milk. One has to go from here. Now, the question is, does this indicate splits in the Joint Arab List? Sure. The Joint Arab List is an electoral alliance forced on the Arab parties precisely because of the 3.25 new threshold. And how they will act afterwards is something that So we'll have to just wait and see. There are at least two parties in the joint list that are very close to Meretz. One is Chadash, and the other one is Ram Etal Ahmad Tibi's party, and the others are less close. So it's a question. This is very fluid. The future of the Arab list is very fluid. I, by the way, think it's a function of the number of seats they'll receive. They can get anywhere between 12 and 15. If they get 15 seats or 12 or 13 even, they will have immense power in the next Knesset, and I think that will change a lot in terms of their conduct and in terms of the prospects of cohesiveness down the line.
Hi, Naomi. This is Nancy Bernstein in Pittsburgh. I just wanted to ask you a question about kind of what happened with Tzipi Livni. She doesn't even seem to be anywhere in anyone's conversations in the election.
Bibi can't start a sentence without mentioning Tzipi Livni.
I mean, in Herzog, in Herzog's campaign, there isn't any discussion.
No. She's there. The pictures come together, etc. But I think more and more people realize that, you know, we're down to the line at this stage. And it's, in the first instance, it's either Herzog or Bibi. And therefore, Tzipi is there. But when you're talking about who the realistic alternatives are at this stage, these are two realistic alternatives. She's campaigning. She was in the Karbal Shuk market today with Herzog. She's on the trail all the time. They go around together a lot. She's very active. It's very hard. If you were here, you would note that it's very hard to miss her.
Oh, okay. All right. It sounded to me like she wasn't very popular, that she actually could hurt Herzog in some ways.
Some people say that, but again, nobody really tested that. I think the only test is going to be the test on at the ballot box, and if the union of her party and labor brings to a victory over the Likud, then she obviously hasn't spoiled anything, has she?
No. Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Naomi, I have a question for you. This is Adam.
Yes.
So you mentioned in your second point that Israel is seriously divided. I think this is something that is definitely clear to everyone, but in what way do you think that this can be undone?
Well, it's going to take a lot of work. One of the undercurrents of this election is who is an Israeli? What is an Israeli? What is Israeli identity? What's the connection between Israel and being Jewish? Where do the Arab citizens of Israel stand? Now, this election has a very strong probability of bringing in a hefty Arab presence in the Knesset, along with a validly racist presence in the form of Baruch Mazel and other elements in Eli Shai's Yachad party. And this gives you some indication of the extent of the acrimony. Many people haven't been paying attention to Avigdor Lieberman this round because he's really dropping in the polls. But his campaign in the last couple of weeks has been basically calling for death penalty for terrorists. Really one of the most, he's outdoing himself in terms of anti-Arab rhetoric. On the other side, Adam, the center and the left is very little patience for this kind of talk, and it's actually succeeding in getting people very angry that this is the kind of discourse that is being used. So that's one side of the problem. Another side of the issue is once again, sometimes purposely, the Ashkenazi-Mizrahi divide is coming out very strongly in this campaign. It's being manipulated and used and, frankly, I would say abused by various parties. And that, once again, is highlighting the very strong divisions within Israel. Now, all this stuff can't continue much longer like this without spilling over into very ugly kinds of scenes, which we were party to this past summer. And it's going to take a concerted effort to start knitting together the contours of an Israeli society that can be cohesive. It's going to be not an easy job. Here, by the way, Buji Herzog has a very strong advantage because his entire approach to politics is very inclusive, and he's a person who is a team player and prefers compromises, and that's why from that perspective, I think the possibility of his becoming prime minister is very timely indeed.
Are there any more questions? Would anyone like to ask a question? Okay, so if there are no more questions, I would just like to say a tremendous thank you to Naomi for joining us. Sorry for the technical difficulties again. We'll be doing another conversation next week with Galia Golan at 12 p.m. noon. You can register online. I hope you enjoyed the call. And if you missed any of the points, this is recorded and will appear online. So, Naomi, thank you again.
All the best. Bye-bye.